In this blessed study of Bhagavad Gita, we have come up to the 38th verse of second chapter. And from this 39th verse, as we saw last time, a new subject is about to begin. So it is good that we recapitulate a few things before going forward. We saw that Arjuna, the disciple of the scripture, who represents all of us, he is caught in a dilemma as to what is to be done, what is not to be done. His sense of duty is pulling him in one direction. His attachments are pulling him in another direction. Also, his sense of what is right and not right, that also is getting all disturbed. And therefore, he feels completely lost. And thus, he asks Sri Krishna, the teacher, the Lord himself, that please tell me what is right, what should I do? Take me out of this mire. I am terribly suffering, and this suffering cannot be removed by anything that you may get on this earth or heaven. This suffering is not removable by any secular solution. Secular in the sense, whatever one can get in this world will not be able to remove this problem. And therefore, he says, I am asking you, O Lord, to provide the solution for me. Sri Krishna sees first that, well, he is in delusion, and that delusion is causing this terrible attachment. Delusion makes us feel that I and the world as it appears is real, and therefore we get attached to the things around us because we know that they are real as such. We forget or overlook, or even when we see, we refuse to acknowledge that everything around is a passing show. It is not real. It comes and goes. You cannot stop its coming and going. Moreover, it is a flux. So one gets attached to those things by not seeing this truth, this clearly perceivable but yet seldom perceived fact that things come and go, they are not real. Taking them to be real is the cause of attachment and therefore the cause of suffering. So, therefore, Sri Krishna decides to bring this illumination that really you are the Self which cannot be killed. The body is one thing, the Self is another thing. The idea of indweller of the body is very important. It will come again and again in Bhagavad Gita, in fact in all scriptures, because that is where our hope of immortality, the hope of bliss rests. If we are body, we are just matter, friends. and matter has no freedom. Matter is bound by laws. So, we have to understand this fact that we are not the body but indweller of the body. Like the one who dwells in the house is different from the house. House is one thing, the indweller of the house is another. You go to see somebody in the house, but you don't say, "Hello house, how are you?" What you are concerned is the person inside. You come to the house, no doubt, but your intention or your desire is not to see the house per se, but your friend who is living in the house. So we really approach the bodies, but what we are concerned is not the body, but the indweller of the body, the one who lives in the body, Dehi. These two words come, Deha and Dehi. Deha is the body and Dehi, the indweller of the body. This distinction has to be borne in mind, because our eyes cannot see the indweller. We try to say that this indweller doesn't exist. All that we have is body. But if that is true, then really speaking, there is no meaning to our living. There is no meaning to the ideas of achievements. There is no even any idea of morality. Ethics and morality also have no scope. There is no scope for thinking even for the enhancement of enjoyment. Because after all, boy, we are all bodies, and bodies cannot enjoy it. It is matter. So really speaking, even though we do not acknowledge it, we believe unconsciously that there is an indweller. That also is proved by the fact that while the body changes, there is something that does not change. The soul or the self does not change. So that which does not change in the midst of changes, that is being pointed out by this word, Dehi, the indweller of the body. So this is actually the subject of analysis in all Vedanta, all these scriptures, that who am I? I have to find out my real nature. And when I know that, then all the knots of my confusion, they will just be cut asunder. There will be nothing left to be known, because all knowledge will be found there. When I know who am I, the problems are just gone. All problems really are because I do not know my real nature. So therefore, this first has to be impressed upon ourselves, that I am not the body. The body goes, and yet the soul survives. Not only that, it takes different bodies. It is just as we change our clothing, so the body is another clothing, we change that too when needed. And we discuss that at length, there will be occasion again to discuss that how, depending on the suitability, the soul takes different bodies. The bodies, they come and go, and yet the soul is immortal. Nothing that happens to the body actually changes the soul. And therefore, the thing to be remembered is, this is what we really are. It removes immediately so many concerns that we have. Just try to feel this fact, friends, that I am not the body. And see how much free you feel. It is, I do not then have to be bothered by the these distinctions of age. I am neither young nor old, because they are the these adjectives of body alone. Body is young or body is old. I am neither man nor woman. These distinctions of sex also pertain only to the body. I am rich or poor, well, they are also the distinctions pertaining to body. There is nothing then that really can hinder our happiness. As soon as I know I am not body, see how much freedom I feel. It is, I am not then limited by space, because I am not body. Body is limited by space. Think of our then unlimited nature. We take this example quite often, that day when one says, like Tom will say, I am at Vedanta Society right now. But physically his body is here, but the mind can be anywhere. It is not necessarily here. It is, let us hope that it is here right now, but it need not be. The body is at a place, it is limited by space, but you can be all-pervading. So, as soon as one understands this principle that I am not body, see how much freedom one can enjoy. It is, even this thought, let alone experience, even this thought, when becomes a little bit concentrated, one can feel this great sense of freedom. When it becomes experience, I am not body, it's a very different thing. Then one can really love each other much better. Being in the body, we cannot love everyone. There is love and hatred, let alone everyone, even one. It is difficult to love even anybody as bodies, because there is always contradictions associated with it. Whereas, when you are not body, then you are really everywhere. There is hardly any distinction here and here. And thus you can see the same self everywhere. Therefore, our ideal, we all say that the highest moral ideal is to love everyone. To feel that idea, love thy neighbor as thyself, that can actually come to our experience with this idea that I am not the body. So Arjuna has been explained all this. Also, it has been understood here, Lord Krishna understands this, that this knowledge is not very easy to experience all of a sudden. He understands that Arjuna doesn't want to get distracted from his primary question, that what should I do and what should I not do. It is, the battle is on there, about to begin, and the primary question was whether I should fight or I should not fight. And this all philosophy was Arjuna from time to time is feeling is rather out of place. Why am I being subjected to all this big lecture? Just tell, should I fight or should I not fight? But this is not really the question there. The problem is Arjuna doesn't want to fight, whereas Krishna wants him to fight. So therefore, Krishna has to give rationale for fighting. Exactly, the idea is not whether fight or not fight, do your duty. So, Sri Krishna gives some mundane arguments also there, that what will happen if you don't fight? People are going to call you coward. Don't think that they will glorify you as the one who, out of the compassion of the heart, has decided not to fight, not to kill and go away. They remember very well what you said to them a few days back. And also now they will say that, look, this coward, he chickened out. When before the war began, he was telling everybody that get ready to get killed by my arrows. And now when the time to fight came, this fellow ran away. They will say all sorts of such things about you. And then you will really feel so horrible. So therefore fight. Therefore do your duty. The 38th verse was a kind of the summation of all this, culmination of all this that we saw in our last Bhagavad Gita class, that whether it brings pleasure or pain, whether it brings success or failure, do your duty. Sukha dukhe same kritva labha labhau jaya jayo tato yuddhaya yujyasva naivam papam avapsyasi. That whether sukha dukha, that is pleasure and pain. Pleasure and pain come in life. In fact, one automatically brings another too. That Swami Yuktatmananda gave once lecture here and said, it is like buying one and getting another for free. We buy pleasure and get pain for free. It is a package. So, get one, buy one, get another for free. So, it is, pleasure comes with pain. It is, so therefore don't worry whether you get pleasure or pain. Also, success or defeat. Don't worry about that. Do your duty. Because if you don't do your duty, you already have failed. So there is no hope of success at all. If you are doing your duty, at least there is hope of success. At least you can say, I did my best. So do your duty. And by doing so, you will not incur any sin. In the sense, your conscience will not bother you. The real sin is in Vedanta, is associated with conscience. Where there is a sense of right and wrong, then when you do not do what is right, then you feel a prick inside. I should have done this. I did not do that. And that is the cause of sin. If a dog bites somebody, that is no sin at all. It is, after all, dog doesn't have that sense. It is instinctively, it will, if you try to do something that it doesn't like, it's going to bite you. But dog doesn't incur sin because of that. If a dog from a compound jumps on somebody, we had some such case recently, maybe a year ago in Providence. And then that dog jumped from the compound and attacked somebody on this walking on the sidewalk. Now, the dog was not charged with any crime. The owner did not do what is right. And therefore, the owner was charged. The dog has no sense of right and wrong in that case, and therefore dog doesn't commit any sin. And it is that all river may get flooded and may kill hundreds of people, but the river does not commit any sin. It doesn't have that sense of right and wrong. Our sense of right and wrong, that is the cause of feeling this sin. So when you do something that is your duty, your conscience becomes clear. Your conscience is free, and therefore you don't commit any sin. Whereas if you don't do your duty, then that pain will be there, because you know inside, you can fool all others, but inside your conscience will be telling you, hey, you didn't do this, you should have done that, and you failed there. That is the source of all sin. And therefore, when your conscience becomes clear, having performed your duty, then you don't incur any sin. Now becomes here it comes, the other chapter, not exactly chapter, but other subject begins here, that of practicality. That Sri Krishna must be thinking like all of us, that this indwelling self, which is all-pervading, immortal and all that, the experience of that is impossible. It sounds very nice, like a theory, very good. But is it real? Can we experience it? Can we really know it? Can we really experience that we are immortal? Can we really experience that it is the existence is one, all-pervading? Can we really experience it? It is here that Vedanta brings the practical side. The theory and practice must go hand in hand. It is only doing some work without knowing for what it is done, without the purpose and the connection with it. If you do something, it is an activity, it is a movement, but it doesn't serve purpose. It is useless. It is just labor. So there has to be a purpose, a theory has to be there, that why it is being done. And only theory, again, is useless. Both must combine. There should be the knowledge of the purpose, and according to the purpose, then the action should be performed. Both these, when combined together, then alone the practical result is achieved. And therefore now comes the science of practicality here. Each of these things that has been told in Vedanta are intensely practical. We all have the capacity to see God. Some time back, one gentleman, we were walking together, asked me, can we see God? Is it possible to see God? I said, yes, scriptures tell that it is possible to see God, and they are not there to tell us lies. They also tell us how to do that. So it is certainly possible to see God. But one has to walk on that course. If somebody asks you that, is it possible to see Florida? Well, it is possible to see Florida, but you have to go there for that. By sitting here in Providence, and that is not the way to see Florida. You have to actually go there, then you will be able to see that. Sitting here will not do. Whether Florida exists or not, well, we have the maps, we have the chart, we know that so many people had been there, so Florida is. There is no doubt about that. Florida is. And you can also go there. There is the route to go to Florida. You can certainly go. And when you go, then you see it. So, these things are very practical. Sri Krishna says in 39th verse that Esha te abheta sankhe buddhi yoge tu imam shrunu buddhya yukto yaya partha karma bandham prahasyasi. Let me read the translation. The requisite mental attitudes towards the self has just been taught to you. Now, hear about it in respect of the way of action, being endowed with which, O Partha, you will get rid of the bondage of actions. It has been, the mental setup has been told to you. Now, come in the field of action. This is called yoga. The word yoga, in all these scriptures you will see, in Upanishads, in Bhagavad Gita, comes with this meaning. The translation of theoretical concepts into practical experience. This is the meaning of yoga. Yoga here sometimes means only some physical exercises. That is a small part of it. The real meaning of yoga is to join. Join with what? Join yourself with this ultimate experience. Join with your divine nature. That is the meaning of yoga. So, theoretical ideas we all have, but the practical experience of it, that comes with practice. Like you may read the book on swimming, but then that doesn't make you a good swimmer if you only read the book about swimming. You have to get into water, practice, then it comes. You may read a few books on how to play piano, and then that doesn't make you a great pianist. You have to start practicing. After practicing years and years, well, a little bit you can learn. So similarly here also, the gap between theoretical understanding and practical experience is bridged through practice. That practice is called yoga. And how is this yoga? Sri Krishna tells that when you become joined by this yoga, then you will be able to cut asunder this bondage of action, karma bandha. This bondage of action will be cut asunder. What is this bondage of action? We are all caught in this terrible bondage, the bondage of action. See how it works. We all feel that, well, let me finish this work and then have rest. Whenever we get some work, we want to finish it and then be at rest. But every work that we finish gives birth to a few more. Then we are after finishing them. Let me finish these. Again, each of them have the same property to breed more. So, this is the bondage of action. We cannot really finish doing our works. It is sometimes we feel that let me once get rid of this, let me first get married, and then everything will be all fine, then there will be no problem in life. Well, it is, everybody knows how it works. New problems, new situations to deal with, they keep on multiplying. In Indian, there's some epics, like the 700 verses of Mother Durga, that there comes the story of a demon. That demon was to be killed. His name was Raktabij. Raktabij means, Rakta is blood. Every drop of that blood was a seed by which other similar demon will sprout, will come up. So, that was how this demon was. Now, how to kill such a demon now? That demon, whenever you strike a weapon, this sword would cut the demon, but then the blood will fall on the ground, and as soon as the blood falls on the ground, every blood drop of that demon will create another body, another same demon will be created, one more. So it won't die. In fact, that demon got multiplied. So again and again, that goddess tried to kill by ordinary ways, could not kill. So then it is, the story goes that she took the arrow and did in it such a way that the head of the demon did not fall on the ground. No blood drop fall on the ground, so that there was no other body of the demon could come. So our doing performance of actions is like that. Let me finish this work. It doesn't finish. Again and again it keeps on increasing. Never ever you can finish the work. One work you finish, it brings three more works ready, right there to be done. And we make these plans that after finishing this work once for all, I will then be free, then I will rest a lot. I make those plans myself a lot, you know, that after this thing, then I will go and sleep nicely. Doesn't happen like that. It is all lined up, and by the time I finish one work, it gives rise to three more works. So it is, that is what is called the bondage of work. We are all bound by that. Do the work and then it is, you get bound by it further. It is not possible. One Swami had told a nice story. That it is a fact, in fact, it is, you can see that he was telling one Swami, a young novice, that look, never entertain an idea that you will finish all these works and then retire and take name of God. The works never finish. Remember, the works never finish. He showed the river Ganges flowing there and pointed out, look, when it originated in the Himalayas there, the current was only very small, not much width there. You could have just jumped from this shore to the other shore. It was so narrow. But suppose you decide that, no, why should I cross the river? I will cross it lengthwise. I will cross it lengthwise. Now, can you ever cross it lengthwise? He showed, now, you see, when it meets the ocean, it doesn't end, it becomes ocean. So, how can you now cross ocean? So, our works are also like that. We feel that I will finish this and be done with it. It will not be possible at all. This has to be remembered. I have seen so many cases. In fact, every case looks like that. That idea that after retirement I will devote myself fully to God. It doesn't happen. It is unless you have practiced it before that, the retirement brings out so many other works associated. And even if they do not bring, you will dig out some. So it is like that. It is the bondage, terrible bondage of work. Continuously you are forced to work. And you do not know what for. You have to keep on doing it. It is like the prisoner being punished with this, that you will stay here and you will have to do this work all the time. That breaking the stone. In India earlier they used to give that work to prisoners. Take the snow stone boulders. Before those stone crushers were invented, it used to be the job of the prisoners. So keep on breaking the stone. So like that we are keeping breaking the stone all the time. What for are we doing the work? We don't know. It keeps on happening. So Swami Akhandananji used to tell the story of a insane person. That he was a little bit of his mind and so. He used to do continuously, the fellow used to be busy. What he would do was collect all from the streets and sidewalks and the train station, all those people there drink tea in little small mud cups. And then after drinking the tea, throw the mud cup out there. He used to collect them, bring them in a town square, and then take a big bat-like thing and start breaking them. I would get tired all day breaking that, and would keep on wiping his sweat and would see huge amount of work still pending, and these people are passing by, nobody stops to help me. It is, and I have to do it all alone. He would break those, then go to get more from everywhere, would never finish the work. People would just laugh and say, who told you to do this business? We also are working like that. We call that fellow was mad, but think about what we do. We keep on breaking such parts, one after other, bring more and more loads, more and more work is brought to be finished, never ending process. And what for are we doing it? Nobody knows what for I am doing it. We have to do it, that is the bondage. We have to do it. There is no choice that she will do or I will not do. You are caught in this. You have to do it. That is the bondage. We are bound by this. In philosophical terms, this bondage can be called as what is called here the bondage of work. One can call it as bondage of cause and effect. The cause gives birth to effect, that effect in turn becomes cause and then brings another effect, that again brings cause, becomes cause and brings next effect. So it goes on and on endlessly, no end to it. So this is called a bondage of action. Can we then ever become free? We all want freedom. Freedom is such an important, unsatiable urge in human beings. In fact, in all creatures, nobody wants to remain bound. We all want freedom. And here is the situation. Terrible bondage. And even if we go to break this bondage, it is again an action, again its result, again that will become the cause of next action, then again will come its result, goes on and on, like the cycle. A person can never finish, can never get to the destination, if the path is circular. Keep on walking, 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 never ending. It is, a person was told, he was a bit disturbing, so somebody wanted to keep that fellow engaged all the time. So he was told that he was put in a circular room and was told to sit in a corner. In a circular room, he was told to go and sit in a corner. Now, how with no corners, so the fellow kept on moving all the time, you see. So, our condition is like that. In this, there is no rest, continuously moving from one object to another object, thinking that this object will satisfy all my desires. Well, it doesn't happen. Sometimes one feels dreams like that well, if I get this much, then the life will change. Many such things come and go. Thirst never gets fulfilled. We keep on going like that. They make those bulls work in the mills. They make that oil mills in India. Here also they must have been doing that earlier days, that a bull crushes that oil grains, and those oil seeds get crushed by the bull, and then oil comes. Now how to make that bull go on? From the head of the bull they would protrude one stick like that. And then on the stick would hang some grass down right there. So the bull sees the grass right in front, keeps on walking to eat the grass. Now will never get the grass because it is just tied to his head. So the bull keeps on walking, and seeds get crushed and you get the oil. So like that we are just walking, thinking that tomorrow I will get the happiness that I was seeking, and this next day, let me get this job, and then nobody will be happier in the world than I am. It doesn't happen. Things just like that go on passing by. We do not know what we are doing this for. Purposelessly wandering through this forest of life, where is the end? We do not know. So Lord tells that, look, this is the way out. Yoga, karma bandham prahasyasi. By following this yoga, you will cut asunder this bondage of action. This bondage will be gone if you do this yoga. What is this yoga? Yoga is doing the works as told in the earlier, that 38th verse, that whether it brings success or failure, whether it brings pleasure or pain, in a detached manner, learn to do your duty. That is the first step. Be detached. Try to see the truth that you are not the body. Knowing that, understanding that, try to do your work. While you do this work, then gradually it will bring you to the understanding. When you will understand the truth, gradually you will start feeling it. When you feel it more, you will then start experiencing it. It is a practical course. So, then Shri Krishna tells Arjuna, do this yoga. that when you do this yoga, then all this bondage of action will vanish for you. You will cut this bondage. It is so, looks, you know, that as if how is it possible? When one tries to pinchingly feel this bondage of action, most of the people do not feel it at all. They do not feel that they are bound. They feel how nice it is. I received an email some days back that what is this meaning of this religion and believing in God and this self-indwelling self. I do not need to believe this. This whatever I am experiencing in this world is enough for me. I am quite happy about it. I don't need any further questioning. So, why should there be this religion? Then I replied to him, well, if you don't want, you don't need it. It is only for those who need it. If you feel that you are quite happy, then it is a little more time for you to understand the meaning of this. It is not that everybody will be feeling the need for it. It is when you will feel the need for it, then you will come. It is you are still in the, at a different stage. When that stage will be over, then you will feel the need of it. Most of us refuse to think penetratively that is this real. We have to examine and see what the purpose of life should be. So, when we come to that stage, then only we start feeling the bondage. And when we start feeling the bondage, we start seeking the how to get free from that bondage. So, when you understand, Sri Krishna tells Arjuna, that when this yoga that I am going to tell you, when you practice it. Now, yoga is not matter of just understanding. It is matter of practicing. It is not about reading the books, but it is plunging into practice of it. So, and this practice is such that everybody can do. In the next verse, Arjuna is told a very important, very beautiful things. I will just tell that in short, and then we will stop for the day. If you have your some questions, we will consider those.
Neha bhikrama nashosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpamapi asya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. In this there is no waste of any undertaking nor chance of incurring sin. Even the least bit of this religion saves one from great danger. It is the first thing that our minds are doubtful. So, first thing that comes into the mind of Rishali will be, okay, if I take this up, but suppose I did not complete it, then it will all go away. All my labor will go away. I started yoga according to what you did, but it all went away. It didn't. Because I could not complete it, all my labors were wasted. Or it is also possible that some other obstacle will come in between and destroy everything. Like you invest in the stock thinking that you will get big gain, and suddenly something the market went down.
and you now feel that you are all lost. So something like that may happen. The farmer may sow the seed, make the soil ready, sow the seed, and take all the care. But if there is no water, no rains, then in spite of all efforts, all that will be wasted. So a person may think that if I practice this yoga, very difficult. If I do it, but if some other problems come, some other obstacles come, then it will all go away. My investment, you know, it will all go away. I want assurance. I want assurance that all my efforts will be successful. Lord Krishna understands our mentality very well. He is perfect psychologist. So, therefore he tells right in the beginning, don't worry, Vrishali, all your efforts, nothing will be lost, you see. None of the efforts that you put here will be lost. In all other fields, your efforts are fraught with doubt. You start business, whether it will be successful or not, who knows, you don't, it is doubtful. If you are sick, go to the doctor, whether the medicine will work or not, who knows. Also, you are having the doubts about the side effects. If you take a medicine, well, what side effects will it bring? Who knows? So, Shri Krishna tells about this particular yoga that whatever you do will not be lost at all. There will be no problems. Also, it has no side effects. This yoga is such that it has absolutely no side effects. Now, are you ready to take it up? We need all such assurances, you know, childish that we are. In major things, we don't look into these things. You know, we are so childish that in many, many other things, we just go headlong, although there are so many dangers, so many problems, so many chances of loss, yet we don't question that. But here we will start questioning, is this yoga problem free? If I do this and if I do not complete it, well, what I did, will that be all gone? So Krishna assures that no, whatever you do, that much success you will get. Whatever you do will never be lost. And also there is no adverse side effect at all. There is no adverse effect of this. Whatever you do will be only good. And also even if you do a little bit, this investment is such that even a little investment will bring huge gain. Don't you want to do such investment? What? You don't want such investment? Even if you do a little investment, the gain is huge. So, Sri Krishna tells that practice this yoga. It is, there is no chance of losing anything here. Absolutely no possibility of losing anything. And no side effects, no other problems. Now, so have your investment. We will continue with this next Friday. Any questions? Yes, Tom?
When you said that, Krishna said that nothing was lost, could he also mean that if you died and you couldn't complete this yoga, that effect would still be there?
That is true too. Even that is also meant here. That is true, yes. You pick up another life which will be conducive. That question will be asked in the sixth chapter. That if I start practicing yoga, and suppose I die, then what happens, whatever, is it like that baseball inning, if you are just about to get your this run, but by that time everybody is out. Now what happened to what you had earned? It is all gone now. So what I earned, will it all be gone? Shri Krishna tells, no, it will not be gone. It will be always with you. It is like journeying. When you go in the car, and then when it is evening, if you don't want to drive at night, you take a halt in some motel. You started from Providence towards Florida, and then in the evening you decided to stop somewhere in Maryland. Now, the next day you don't start again from Rhode Island, you start from Maryland down further. So, it's like that. Now, nothing that you do will ever get lost. Not only in the next life, even in this life, suppose you started with the these practices, but in between became callous, didn't do it, then what happens to what you did? Still, that also will not get lost. That will still remain with you. So let us conclude with the closing prayers.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmat Vinesrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Ekao Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namaniyani Karma Pekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpana.